Welcome to the February 2026 News Bulletin podcast for yacht and small craft marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, you do not need me to remind you that we are surrounded by innovative, marine sector tech on all fronts, racing ahead and burgeoning, seemingly at a pace I can't recall at any point in my lifetime. And as one gets older, rather like me these days, it is easy to turn a blind eye to what's happening, and to plough on with what we know, accepting the norm, hoping it will all just go away. But of course, it doesn't, so we must try and embrace what's new and cope with the inevitable change and resulting disruption to our lives it brings. For younger and less experienced marine surveyors, I'd suggest ignoring what is going on around them right now is dangerous, and creates knowledge voids and potential pitfalls as vessel design, hull materials, alternative fuels and evolving propulsion systems, to name but a few, present new challenges as well as opportunities. The importance of learning and continuous professional development has never been more critical. This leads me nicely on to mention the Consumer Electronics Show, which claims to be the most powerful tech event in the world. It was held at Las Vegas in January. So, what's that got to do with the maritime sector, you may well ask? I have ignored this event in previous years, but it is clear that some of the industry's movers and shakers have not. It offers an entirely different backdrop to a traditional boat show and opens up a new audience. US-based Brunswick Corporation operates at a scale that few companies in boating can ever hope to compete with. It is the world's largest marine technology company, spanning propulsion, electronics, boat building, parts, accessories, and digital services. By attending CES, Brunswick has placed boating into the broader technology conversation rather than treating it as a niche leisure market. The company returned to last month's event with its largest marine exhibit to date. Rather than focusing on a single headline product, the company's ACES approach is appearing in boats that are either in production now or close to it. ACES stands for Autonomous or Assisted, Connected, Electrified, and Shared Boating. At CES 2026, the emphasis was on showcasing exactly how those ideas translate into hardware and software that is already finding their way into real boats. John Kelly, Consumer Technology Association Vice President and CES Show Director, said, "We have certainly seen the continued evolution of boating into a technology-driven sector at CES. The show brings together the mobility ecosystem across air, land and sea, and that convergence is creating more opportunities for marine companies to meet partners, compare solutions and bring new ideas to market." Fascinating. In late December, I had the privilege of joining a group of surveyors in Plymouth, UK, an event organised by local member, Nick Healy, on what turned out to be a foul and stormy evening weather-wise. The sole topic for discussion that night was lithium-ion batteries, and the challenges they present to a surveyor, the most talked-about subject of last year. We were joined by Simon Firth from locally based Pantineus Insurance, who gave a glimpse into the concerns and issues this technology is presenting for the insurance industry. On the subject of lithium-ion batteries, we have now sold a number of units from the newly launched lithium battery course we developed in conjunction with David and Magda O'Neill last year, and the feedback is positive. If you have yet to check out this Essential 4-module course, which offers 10 to 12 hours of expert tuition on the subject, please head to trainingportal.iams.org.uk for more details. And finally, I have just returned from a short trip to co-host the annual IIAMS Baltimore Conference alongside members James Randy Wren and Ray Bracken, held at the MIT AGS facility on the outskirts of the city. It is always a pleasure to spend time with member surveyors and non-members. In the US as always, the range of topics was far-reaching and provoked much discussion. My thanks to James and Ray for organizing a great and inspirational speaker lineup, and to all those who attended either in person or virtually. Survey well, Mike. For our first story, post-construction assessment papers trigger official UK policy review. Throughout 2025, work continued on Recreational Craft Directive, Recreational Craft Regulations and Post-Construction Assessment Research, with a newly drafted paper by Tom Keeling, known as PCA2, receiving an encouraging response from Graham Russell MBE, Chief Executive of the UK Office for Product Safety and Standards. The paper is due for wider release in early this year. Since the release of the PCA1 paper in 2024, IIAMS has remained engaged with members and sector colleagues, in the hope that keeping the topic in focus will help drive an industry response, leading to clarification. Additionally, the IMAR EST exec has agreed to provide whatever support it can to help. Following receipt of the PCA2 paper, OPSS has agreed there is confusion across the industry in relation to the PCA requirements. OPSS recognizes the matters raised and we will be in contact with other stakeholders in the sector on this issue. Continuing, they confirmed they are reviewing the information published on gov.uk and by other organizations regarding the PCA requirement in the regulations to determine whether a revision to OPSS regulatory guidance for the RCR would provide clarity for businesses and professionals operating in this market. This is good news for the sector, which has struggled to understand how to apply PCA, following a difficult few years of varying interpretations. OPSS also confirmed that trading standards are actively engaged in reviewing industry guidance. This dual approach can only be positive for the recreational small craft industry and provide much-needed clarity. One large problem area is amateur-fitted professionally built hulls, commonly known as sailaways. Throughout the late 1990s and into the 2020s, thousands of DIY enthusiasts bought part-completed vessels from manufacturers, fitting them out and putting them to use, many as liveaboard homes. The inland waterways industry happily endorsed and supported the practice, understanding that such vessels could be considered as home-built boats. As a result, they qualified for an exemption to the RCD as long as they were not sold on for a period of 5 years from the date of completion, the so-called five-year rule. Recently, attitudes in some quarters have changed, with some brokers telling boaters their long-completed sailaway vessels are illegitimate, having been incorrectly entered into service by not being CE marked. They are told they have in fact modified a product, and as such, a PCA by an approved body is required, and that this is a legal requirement in order to sell the vessel. Some boaters follow this instruction, and costs incurred are reported to rise to around £10,000 in some cases. In 2023, an informally arranged brokers group was formed to challenge this emerging view on the basis that they believed all they were doing in the past, and in fact all boaters were doing, was following industry guidance. Contemporary letters and printed guides from high-ranking and respected organizations like the Boat Safety Scheme, Royal Yachting Association and the Canal Boat Builders Association were produced that supported this view, that a sailaway vessel is a home-built vessel and as long as it is not sold within 5 years of completion, is exempt from the regulations thereafter. However, still some disagreed that the five-year rule was ever a thing. During this 25-year period of prolific amateur fit-out of professionally built hulls, Hampshire Trading Standards were the lead authority in the UK regarding the RCD, their role in providing top-level compliance guidance to the industry, trade organisations, as well as trading standards offices across the country was well known and documented. In fact, in 2010, to provide absolute clarity, Hampshire Trading Standards published a set of guidance fact sheets about the RCD, including one entitled Canal Boats. Re-released in early November 2025 through a Freedom of Information request, the fact sheet makes clear what the UK national position was regarding sailaways. The guidance is unambiguous, and it is clear the concept of amateur-fit sailaways was endorsed at the highest levels. Marine professionals are now optimistic that the ongoing review by OPSS and trading standards will at last provide authoritative guidance and clarification, reassuring owners and sellers of such vessels what is required of them in order to sell their used vessels, ending a period of considerable unease in the sector. In our next segment, the UK Maritime and Coast Guard Agency has published MGN 710M safety management systems for small workboats and pilot boats. It sets out practical ways to demonstrate that an SMS is implemented and operational on board, primarily through an annual self-assessment or an equivalent method providing comparable assurance. The MGN clarifies the role of the certifying authority, emphasizing that their function is limited to sampling evidence of SMS implementation as part of the certification process, rather than auditing or developing the system. It also outlines expectations for periodic SMS reviews, responsibilities for addressing findings internally, and specific considerations for remotely operated unmanned vessels and remote operation centers. The guidance supports proportionate, practical safety management, encourages continual improvement, and reinforces that responsibility for the SMS remains with the owner or operator. You can read the full guidance via the IIMS website. Next, six crew members were forced to abandon ship after prawn trawler Odyssey capsized and sank in the North Sea on the 29th of October 2024. Its crew were rescued from a life raft uninjured. According to the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch, the accident occurred after high-capacity deck wash pumps were left running unattended, while the crew recovered the fishing gear, discharging water onto the vessel's weather-tight shelter deck. it is likely that a blocked tonnage valve prevented the water from escaping, resulting in rapid flooding and the catastrophic loss of stability. Safety issues included the following. There was a risk of flooding as the deck wash pumps were left running and unattended. The shelter deck had limited drainage by design, leaving it vulnerable to water buildup when the drainage became compromised. The crew initially mistook the developing list to be normal movement associated with recovering the fishing gear. There was a lack of guidance in relation to flooding risk from deck wash pumps, and the danger had not been addressed in the vessel's risk assessments. And emergency preparedness helped the crew successfully abandon the vessel. Recommendations have been made to the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency to update Merchant Shipping Notice 1872F, Amendment 1 to ensure that existing vessels without the independent pumping capability outlined in 4.3.2.1.3 have additional measures in place to adequately address the risk of water accumulation on weather-tight shelter decks due to blocked, seized, or shut tonnage valves or other water-freeing arrangements, and to update its marine survey instructions for the guidance of surveyors and relevant aid memoirs. The MCA has also been recommended to provide guidance on the additional measures that can be implemented to adequately address the risk of water accumulation on weather-tight shelter decks caused by blocked, seized, or shut tonnage valves or other water-freeing arrangements. The MAIB has also shared a safety flyer of lessons to the fishing industry about the risk of rapid capsize from wash water accumulation. You can download the full report at iims.org.uk. In our next story, at the annual Members' Assembly in December, Confindustria Nautica shared its latest sector forecast based on the Research Department's data-based outlook for the industry. This analysis, drawn from a survey of member companies in early December, points to a cautiously optimistic outlook for Italy's recreational boating and superyacht sectors. The superyacht segment ended 2025 in a strong position. Half of surveyed companies saw their turnover grow compared to last year, and another 25% reported steady results. Order books show growth rates are returning to normal, with half of yards keeping order levels steady and a quarter seeing more orders than last year. Production for boats under 24 meters, such as motorboats, sailing yachts, and inflatables, has been more unpredictable. In 2025, 54% of businesses expect their turnover to drop by anywhere from 5 to over 30%. At the same time, 23% expect things to stay the same, and another 23% predict growth, which is similar to what happened in 2024. Looking ahead to the 2025-26 maritime year, companies are more optimistic. Now, 46% expect growth, 31% think things will stay stable, and 23% still see a possible decline. The sales network for recreational boats shows a similar pattern. For 2025, 62% of respondents expect a negative result, while 38% think things will stay the same. But the outlook is better for the current nautical year. Only 37% expect a negative outcome, 50% predict stability, and 13% see a return to growth. In the marine engine segment, forecasts for 2025 are evenly split: 25% expect growth, 25% expect a decline, and half predict stable turnover. For the nautical year, the outlook improves, with 37% now expecting growth and 50% still seeing stability. The components and equipment sector is seeing a lot of variation. In 2025, 40% expect things to stay stable, while 30% expect growth and another 30% predict a decline, with changes ranging from plus 20% to minus 30% compared to 2024. This wide range shows just how diverse the sector is, covering everything from superyachts to small boats and after sales. For 2025-26, the number of positive responses goes up from 30% to 39%, which suggests that confidence is growing. Leasing and rental companies are among the most positive. In 2025, 57% report turnover growth, 14% see stability, and 29% expect only moderate declines of up to 10%. The outlook for the nautical year is even better, with 64% expecting growth and just 7% predicting a decline. Early signs of a wider recovery, expected in 2026 and 2027, have already appeared at autumn boat shows like the 65th Genoa International Boat Show, helped by new product launches and changing market trends. Up next, a single technical error by an uninsured individual has resulted in the marine surveyor being hit with $70,000 settlement and prompted International Transport Intermediaries Club to warn ship and marine surveyors of the financial exposure they face when relying on third-party data without contractual protection. The dispute arose after a marine surveyor was appointed by a prospective buyer to confirm that a commercial fishing vessel met the requirements of the relevant maritime safety authority. As part of the survey, the surveyor instructed a third-party naval architect to provide technical information needed to calculate the ship's freeboard. The data supplied was wrong, which led the surveyor to report the wrong freeboard and conclude that the vessel's recorded lightweight in the existing stability book was inaccurate. As a result of the incorrect information, the surveyor advised the buyer that the vessel required a full resurvey before it could enter service. In reality, the stability documentation was accurate. The buyer subsequently incurred the cost of the unnecessary second survey and missed 3 fishing trips while awaiting clearance, leading to claims for both the survey expense and the loss of income during the delay. ITIC assessed whether earnings from those missed trips could be claimed and considered the possibility that a court might decide the surveyor was responsible for profit loss that could have been anticipated. The situation was made more difficult by the fact that the naval architect responsible for the incorrect data had no insurance and no formal contract with the surveyor, leaving little chance of recovering any contribution. The claim was eventually settled for $70,000, covering the cost of the second survey and an agreed amount of the lost income. Mark Bratman, claims director at ITIC, said, "Many standard trading conditions exclude liability for consequential losses, such as loss of profits, but in this case, the surveyor was not operating under any such terms. Surveyors should check the credentials and insurance position of any subcontractors they work with and ensure their own terms include a limit on liability, an exclusion for consequential losses, and potentially an exclusion that states the surveyor is not responsible for inaccuracies in third-party information they have reasonably relied upon, all of which should be agreed in writing. It is also important to take care when advising buyers about follow-up surveys and the operational impact of those recommendations. Clear documentation and robust contracts remain central to reducing the risk of costly disputes." In our next report, the UK Maritime and Coast Guard Agency has updated and replaced guidance on fire safety and storage of small electric-powered craft on yachts. MGN 681M Amendment 1 includes clarification for the functionality of storage and charging cabinets or boxes where these are used as part of the solution for the carriage of lithium-ion batteries used on personal vehicles. Small electrically powered craft and other vehicles are becoming more commonly used in place of similar petrol-powered craft or vehicles stowed on yachts. Whilst electric craft do not necessarily represent a greater fire risk than petrol craft, there are considerable differences in best practice for fire prevention, storage, fire detection and fire suppression of such craft, which should be considered when they are stored on board. The guidance is explicitly for lithium-ion batteries. Batteries with alternative chemistries may present a different risk profile during charging or stowage. You can read the full guidance online on the news page of the IIAMS website. Up next, the UK Maritime and Coast Guard Agency has released an amendment to MGN 657, M&F, Amendment 1 requirements for fixed aerosol fire extinguishing systems for use in small vessel machinery spaces. The update clarifies that the design density should be calculated based on the net volume of the protected space, as well as clarifying the test criteria including the pass-fail criteria and arrangements for the test mock-up. You can find out more via iiams.org.uk. And for our final story, the UK Cross-Party House of Lords Secondary Legislation Scrutiny Committee has criticised the length of time taken by the Marine and Coast Guard Agency to implement recommendations from marine accident reports, made by the Merchant Shipping, Vessels in Commercial Use for Sport or Pleasure, Regulations 2025. The regulations set out various requirements for small and large vessels and introduce additional requirements arising from recommendations made in 2 reports by the Marine Accident Investigation Branch. The report sets out the following concerns. A 2015 marine accident recommendation concerning the inspection of vessels before undertaking offshore races has taken 10 years to implement, during which time a similar incident occurred in 2019. The MCA has not determined a timeline for the implementation of 2 further marine accident recommendations in relation to vessels covered by the regulations. There are currently 13 other outstanding marine accident recommendations beyond those related to the regulations which require implementation, with one dating back to 2016 which will not be implemented until 2026 at the earliest. The information shared with the committee by the MCA about the outstanding marine accident recommendations is at odds with its claim that it responds to them as quickly as possible. The committee has found that the time taken by the MCA to implement marine accident recommendations is unacceptable. The committee has urged the MCA to implement the two outstanding marine accident recommendations relating to vessels covered by the regulations at the earliest opportunity. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.